This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
Chris Singleton, former big leaguer, ESPN baseball analyst, three times an author, and his latest comes out tomorrow. And it comes not tomorrow, the 17th, on the anniversary of the day that I did not realize that your mother was one of the victims at the CME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. And I appreciate your time, and I want to talk about because what happened over the last couple of weeks actually had an impact in baseball with the Rays and the Yankees. Both devoting their social media during a game against each other to only tweeting out about guns and how it impacts our lives. Before we get to everything else about the book, I'm just curious how that impacted you when you saw those two teams do that.
Yeah, man, I'd say that was huge. People using their platform to try to bring awareness to something that has affected a lot of people, not just the things that happen to them personally, but around the country and the world, man, it's sad. So I was impressed by that for sure.
Baseball around the world, how the world plays the game, comes out June 17th. What's the thrust behind this? What can you tell us about it?
Yeah. Well first I'll share this, that, it happens all the time, but, There's two Chris Singletons, man. So I played minor league ball.
I apologize. I'm just realizing that right now. It's okay, because I think it's an issue that we need to talk about. My fault.
Yeah, no worries. But David Ross is why I'm bringing that up. Obviously the manager for the Cubs, and he's actually endorsed my book as well as Harold Reynolds. But this is basically celebrating diversity in this sport, right? So we got players from Dominican Republic, obviously from the States, Canada, Japan, like all over the world. And sports always brings us closer together. So that was the reasoning behind it. And the mission for me is always about unity after I lost my mom.
Chris Singleton is with us here, baseball around the world. What can we learn from baseball? Like, I'm just, I've watched the Dominican World Series or the Caribbean World Series. I know during the pandemic, our first foray back into sports was Korean baseball. What can we learn from baseball around the world that might impact baseball in the United States?
Well, I think it'll give you a different appreciation for it. I know for me, once I started playing professionally and learning about the guys that were playing in Venezuela at 6, 7, 8 years old and how much they love the sport, it gave me a different appreciation for it, So I think it'll definitely do that. You'll learn about baseball in Puerto Rico. You'll learn about different players that you may or may not have ever heard about before. Different types of foods people are eating, there's so many different things that I'm teaching in this book that I'm excited about, and hopefully it brings people closer together.
We're talking with Chris Singleton, author of Baseball Around the World, How the World Plays the Game, comes out in about, 8 days from right now. If we incorporated more of the fun, and I know we're getting pushback on some of that, we even saw that between Josh Donaldson and Tim Anderson, and that's a deeper issue than just about fun, because Anderson, when he referred to himself as Jackie Robinson, he was really talking about being a trendsetter for putting the fun back in the game. How much of an impact would that have on the sport if we just loosened up some of the old school thinking?
Yeah, I think, with that, I think, relationships will always supersede, the things you say or don't say. So if you got a relationship and it's deep with somebody, you can joke around like that. I don't know if they had that relationship, so I can't really speak to that. But I do think we have to bring the fun back in the game. We've been talking about it for the last, I want to say, 5 years really heavy, because we see sports like basketball. Everybody loves football. But baseball is something that it's America's pastime, and, we need to celebrate that. So, I know they're trying to shorten the game a little bit. People are pimping home runs, big strikeouts. People are getting excited. So, I think that stuff is stuff we need to see in our game to keep it pushing forward.
I agree. I'm very pro bat flip. It was cool to see in the KBO. The bat flip is it's an art form. Look, I've always been a fan of it. I think that stuff we celebrate in every other sport. We spike a football after scoring a touchdown. Why is it not okay to essentially spike a bat after hitting a home run? I mean, it's got to be the biggest thrill that you. I know the first time I hit a ball over a fence in a competitive baseball game, the adrenaline rush is something like. Is nothing like I have ever felt. How do we get more diversity back in the game? And by that, I really mean about American diversity, because African American, you know, participation in the game, certainly at the pro level, is way off.
Yeah, I'll say, you know what, the really good thing is that over the last, I want to say 2 or 3 years, the amount of first rounders and high draft picks that are black athletes has gone up tremendously. So I think the tables are turning because we're finally talking about the problem. You know, it's not, you know, the 80s where you see so many different black players or even with me, you know, I loved Andrew McCutchen. He was like my guy as a right. young guy coming up. And so we're actually starting to see that with people like Hunter Green, like you mentioned earlier, Tim Anderson. So if we market those guys like we should, instead of me saying, hey, I'm in, you know, South Side of Chicago, and, you know, obviously I love D. Rose and I love Zach LaVine. And I love Tim Anderson. He's on posters everywhere. And, he's got swag just like these NBA players do. So I think we need to champion that and keep pushing it because that's how we get people in the game when they have their own brands, just like basketball players are doing it, when they're, you know, showing people the lifestyle. Like, I know it's weird and it's not traditionally done in baseball, but that is what will sell, I think, to more through the urban communities.
You know, it's interesting. I grew up in a time where the game, and really maybe all games were similar, but I grew up watching baseball in the 70s and the 80s, and the game just had more style back then. We're getting back to that with some players, but, you know, like a UL Washington, I don't know if you even remember him, who played shortstop for the Royals with a toothpick in his mouth the entire time. Or the I mean, serious, you could see it on YouTube. Or the Joe Morgans who had, you know, the interesting, you know, batting stance with the flapping elbow. We just had more style in the game for kids to imitate. Like now, there's not a lot. Everybody just adjusts their batting gloves and steps out and takes too long.
Yeah, that's funny, man. And I think when you share that, I automatically think about Gary Sheffield and how everybody tried to copy, you know, his batting stance. So I definitely think we need to champion that for sure. But also the players that are doing, the players that are having the swag, let's make sure we're putting them on the billboards and in the commercials because that'll definitely sell.
There is no question. Baseball around the world, how the world plays the game comes out 8 days from now. Chris Singleton, this Chris Singleton, not that Chris Singleton. Accept my apologies, sir. I hope the book does really, really well. Thank you very much for your time.
My pleasure, man. Thank you.
You got it, Chris Singleton. Well, there are plenty of Chris Singletons, I'm sure. All right. When we come back, Nekai Montgomery is a professional lacrosse player. We should call them lacrossers. Anyway, he went to Duke. He's from Dallas. He's
Laxers.
He's part of the Premier Lacrosse League. They're going to be in Charlotte. It is a very cool concept. It essentially, it's barnstorming with one of the most fun styles of the game that you're ever going to see. We'll talk to him next. Nekai Montgomery is a recent third-round pick of the Redwoods in the Premier Lacrosse League, and they're in Charlotte this week. The Barnstorming Tour, week two, Albany last week, Charlotte this week. Pretty soon you'll get a chance to go home to Dallas, Texas. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Just landed in Charlotte on the way to my hotel right now.
All right, well, are they treating you well in the Premier Lacrosse League?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's great. Camp last week was awesome. I thought they crushed it, just kind of from a logistics standpoint. And yeah, I'm excited to get week two going.
All right, I'm curious about this, and there's a lot of questions as somebody who has loved the sport of lacrosse, and I'm a Maryland grad. And I graduated a long time ago. I do not claim the national championship. Once they left the ACC for the Big Ten, I stopped paying attention. But I graduated in 1988. I went to a lot more lacrosse games than I went to football games at the university. I've always wondered why it hasn't been a bigger pro sport, because to watch it in college was absolutely amazing. I'm just curious, this format, when you are essentially a traveling circus, I'm not trying to compare it to a circus, but you're basically a circus. You're traveling from city to city. Do you like this aspect of it?
Yeah, well, this is only my second week, but I mean, it seems pretty cool, you know, get to go to a different city and play on ESPN every weekend. Definitely sounds good on paper, but I mean, it seems, I'm excited. We'll see. I need some time to answer that, but I'm excited, man.
I appreciate the fact that you actually considered the question, because the knee-jerk reaction would be, hey, man, it's great. We get a chance to play pro lacrosse. When you were a kid growing up and you are playing, whether it's, you know, before high school or in high school, did you aspire to be a pro, or is this something you've just sort of kind of fell into as you got through Duke and you were an All-American for 3 years? So I'm just curious, is this what you wanted to do always?
I just kind of wanted to be the best at whatever it was I did, always, to be honest. So I guess kind of, yes, be a pro. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've just always been really competitive, whether in school or in lacrosse or in football or other sports or just chilling at the house. So, I mean, I guess to answer your question, yeah, I guess I definitely wanted to be a pro.
You mentioned, like
I said, at whatever it was.
You mentioned football. You played a little bit for in the final year of David Cutcliffe. How was that? Which is tougher?
Which is tougher? Both are hard, man. Both got, you know, big guys, big strong athletic guys in front of you that don't want you to go forward, you know. And want to push you backwards. So, but both are, you know, both got their own way of being hard, but both are hard. Both are really fun. Obviously, I love both.
You wear less equipment, although I've often said this, and Dennis is a lacrosse coach, the producer of this epic. I've always wondered, why do they allow guys to whack each other with sticks? Like, for no, it just seems like for no reason. Like, I can just hit you with my stick. I've never understood that. That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, that is definitely a part of the game. I don't know. Makes you tougher.
It is all about being toughness. All right, so you come out of Texas. What made you decide on Duke? And then I'll ask you about a current teammate and another Duke grad.
Yeah, so I mean, I decided on Duke when I was 14. Was back dating myself. This was back when the recruiting was you could recruit earlier.
Right.
So kind of coming out of honestly, eighth grade was when, like, a lot of schools filled up their recruiting classes. And so after my freshman year, Duke reached out and wanted me to commit. So I committed to Duke. And then that was, like I said, that was at the end of my freshman year. And then kind of I was always dead set on Duke. And I still couldn't even tell you why. I just knew I wanted to go there for some reason. I didn't have family or anything that went there, or really anyone that I knew. And the only thing that would have that probably could have changed that was play football somewhere else.
I was watching something else over the weekend, and they mentioned the legendary John Donowski, who was at, they were referring to, I guess,
Hofstra. Yeah, the Lightning game.
Yeah, there you go.
That as well.
There you go. I was like, why are we talking about John Donowski? I was actually going to fire off a text to him, but I got distracted. I must have ADD or something. And so I never did reach out to him. But it's very cool to hear that during a hockey game. Nekhi Montgomery is joining us. All right, so when you go to places like Charlotte, as opposed to Long Island, which will be next week, or then Baltimore the following week, when you go to places that where lacrosse doesn't have real deep roots, because I grew up in the New York area, so I know about it on Long Island. I lived in Baltimore for several years. I know about it in the Washington D.C. Baltimore area. I know where the lacrosse hotbeds are. Is it different when you're playing in front of places that lacrosse hasn't been, doesn't have deep roots?
I gotta wait and see. You know what I'm saying? I gotta wait and see. We have some, we actually have some really good, some like family friends now. Shout out to Miss Ginger and the Boswells who call themselves the Duke lacrosse super fans. They came to every game. And of course, my mom being the socialite she is, got to know them and went out to their farm a couple of times out here. So, I mean, it's, you know, these are more Southern people, you know, probably more what we're kind of more used to in Texas. But at the end of the day, I think they're just here to see some good lacrosse, and we're here to give it to them. So that's the plan.
All right, two quick things about the game. You scored a two-pointer. Does college need a two-pointer?
Yeah, definitely. Why not? Like, it's just fun. Like, I don't know. Like, when we go back and watch highlights of, like, Michael Jordan playing at UNC and there wasn't a three-point line, you know what I'm saying? Like, why not? Yeah, like, you know, the next time it's time to vote on rules or implement rules, why not? Not going to hurt anything. Get rid of the goal mouth, too.
Get rid of the goal mouth? What would that do?
I don't know. It's just, like, a weird rule. It takes out subjectivity. It takes out, you know, refs.
Okay.
Whatever the refs think you see, you know, just makes it more objective, I think.
Gotcha.
Make more clear rules than that.
How many goals get scored from, what is it, outside 15 yards? How many goals really get scored from out there?
Man, that's a good question. There were two in our game. There was one that was an almost. Maybe like last weekend in four games, there was about eight or nine.
Okay. Do people typically shoot from there in a college game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No okay. Doubt. Then, yeah, we should have two-pointers in the college game. More scoring.
Absolutely.
People would like it. And maybe Cornell would have come all the way back to beat Maryland
right.
in the national championship game. There's still
– Yeah, they were shooting from deep.
You still have a fighting chance.
Yeah.
Look.
And it's just cool, like, in practice – like having game scenario, okay, we're down one, you know, like, okay, wow, we can win this game in one possession.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like that was a cool thing, kind of like transition from college to the pros. That was a cool thing kind of at camp. And then we also obviously had a two goal. We're down two, those scenarios, working on those plays and stuff like that. So, I mean, this adds another element to the game. Something else coaches have to coach.
That would be a cool thing until your team is on the losing end of of that. But then again, don't give up a two-pointer. And final thing, what is your interest in indoor lacrosse? I mean, we have outdoor. The game looks a lot like what I see in college. Indoors looks I goofy. I mean, it's crazy. It's so fast. What is your?
Yeah.
It's sort of like the difference between indoor soccer and outdoor soccer to me. What is your interest in the NLL?
I would definitely play in the NLL. That seems so cool. I think I fit in that transition, you know, play some D, you know, move some guys, you know, watch out for some picks, try to get up, get out, get a shot off and transition. I think I could maybe do that.
It's a combination of football, hockey, and lacrosse.
Yes, box lacrosse is cool. I like it. I love watching on ESPN.
Nekhi Montgomery. By the way, why did you wear 15 when you went to Duke?
Because of Miles Jones.
Because of Miles Jones?
He wore 15, so I was like, I'm wearing 15. I never wore 15
right.
in my life.
Miles Jones wore it because of Vince Carter. That's the – I can't believe that. He went to Duke.
Oh, that's cool. I never knew that.
See, that's something you can bring up to a former Duke teammate. Actually, you guys never played
cool.
together, right? He was gone before
no.
you got there.
No, yeah, just looked up to him.
Nekhi Montgomery, Duke grad, now with the Redwoods in the Premier Lacrosse League. They'll be in Charlotte this weekend. I appreciate your time, my friend. Good luck. Score another two-pointer, and hopefully we can check in down the road.
Yeah, hopefully we play much better. We'll come out with a win this week.
All right, well, good luck with that.
Thank you so much.
I hope he was not offended that I didn't know that they did not win last week.
That's okay.
Did you wager on the Redwoods last week?
I actually did have them losing.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
You picked against them.
Mm-hmm.
Can't believe that.
Against the Atlas?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're stacked. The Atlas is stacked.
Their attack is strong,
isn't it?
They really are.
There you go. Oh, man, that the jokes write themselves. All right, before we get to the rewind, I went through a little bit of a Twitter, certainly wasn't a rant. There were a lot of clips from the press conference yesterday and the day before over in England where the Live International series is being played. You know what I can't find? I can't find a good leaderboard for Live.
Oh, how unfortunate.
No, I mean, like, I'm curious who. I know DJ finished one under par. He's not in the lead. I don't recognize anybody who's in the lead. I don't. Charles Schwartzel is five under par. It's fine. Anyway, so I watched a little bit of it today, and it looks like golf.
Imagine that.
It just looks like golf on TV, which is, if you like golf on TV, I do, then it looks the same. If you think it's better, I would love to know why you would think it's better, other than there are no commercials because there are no sponsors at this point. I mean, I don't know what the streaming numbers were going to be. I would imagine there's a fair amount of people streaming it because it's something. It's first event. Like, we'll see what happens with the next event, which is at the end of this month. Which is in Portland, Oregon. But it looked like golf on TV. It does have a little bit of a Formula One look in terms of how it's presented. So, and the Saudis are very involved in Formula One. I would imagine there's some crossover in the production. But it just looked like golf to me on my laptop. Actually, it was on my phone initially. All right, before we get to the rewind, here's a couple of things that were said over there. And I want to go back to, because this will get us into something that Mark Brazel said a couple of times, and I didn't want to explore it during the conversation with him, but here's Graham McDowell on not being what everybody wants him to be.
I love using the game of golf as something to kind of help grow around the world. That's pretty much what we've done for the last 20 years, be role models to kids, try and use this game, like I say, as a force of good, really. So, we're not politicians. I know you guys hate that expression, but we're really not, unfortunately. And, we're professional golfers. And if Saudi Arabia want to use the game of golf as a way for them to get to where they want to be, and they have the resources to accelerate that experience, I think we're proud to help them on that journey.
Whoa. Oh, Graham. Oh, man. There's nothing good about that. It's just nothing at all positive about that. You're not being a role model. You're not being a force of good. They're not interested in accelerating the process towards not being a human rights offender. They're not. They are who they are. Nobody should be trying to change. I mean, I guess people are charged with trying to change who they are. But nobody's going to make them change. But what Graham said at the end, we are proud to help them. Like, nah, man, you're not helping them do anything other than make people think that they've changed. Because they're not doing anything. Mm-mm. I mean, all you're doing is allowing yourself to be used. Now, you are getting paid handsomely to do it.
Yeah.
And, all right. So you make that choice. And look, I joked. And I'm not going to pretend. Like, if the Saudis were really into sports radio and they offered me an insane amount of money to do a sports radio show for them, I can't tell you that I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, being as honest as possible, I'm not trying to stand on a morality pedestal here. Everybody's got a price. But I will say this. If I were in the Graham McDowell tax bracket, I'm pretty sure I would have stronger views on that subject, right? But for those, like, the only player I have heard on that tour who has said, hey, man, it's about cash, Richard Bland, who plays primarily on the European tour, won his first event in like 500 starts last year just to qualify for the U.S. Open, and qualified for the U.S. Open based on it. Won his first event ever last year at like age 48.
Wow.
So he's like, I mean, this is my one chance to make a boatload of money.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been upfront about it. Everybody else is lying. Just lying. Graham McDowell's in it to make money, right? We'll leave it at this. This is Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood, two Ryder Cup stalwarts, who are asked a series of questions by the British press. I'm telling you, this is why it's good that the first event was in England, because their press gives no bleeps. Here you go.
Lee and Ian, is there anywhere in the world you wouldn't play? If Vladimir Putin had a tournament, would you play there?
That's speculation. Not even going to comment on speculation.
So, just in a generality, is there anywhere you wouldn't play on a moral basis? If the money was right, is there anywhere you wouldn't play?
I don't need to answer that question.
Sorry?
I don't need to answer that question.
Lee, you want to answer it? Would you have played in apartheid South Africa, for example?
Well, you're just asking us to answer a hypothetical question there, which...
Well, they're moral questions, aren't they?
Answer a question on that.
Trent Krim, the Independent, I don't know. But whoever was asking those questions just came hard.
I mean, I know that it might feel inappropriate. Those were not inappropriate questions. Mm-hmm. And they're not hypothetical questions either. They are, as the reporter responded, they're moral questions. Now, again, it's hard for me to say that I wouldn't do it because money. Yep. And some of us need money. I'm in no position to retire. None at all. I mean, I might have to. I'm not arguing, you know, whatever you need to do. But not all the players. Ian Poulter's of the world with multiple Ferraris and homes in like five different places and Graham McDowell. And I mean, Dustin Johnson, who's made over $200 million in his PGA Tour career. More than $100 million of it on the course and over $100 million off the course. I mean, now we're just talking about, I mean, how big can the pile of money get? Which, again, doesn't mean that you don't do it, right? I'm just thinking that at that point, at some point, you either don't care, which maybe none of these guys do, maybe it doesn't bother them. Real quick, because I keep getting this. Well, what the NBA and LeBron James are in bed with China. Yep. The NBA does have major business interests in China, as does LeBron James. And there are plenty of players who wear shoes made by a Chinese company. The PGA Tour is involved in China. There are roughly 350 American corporations that have major business interests in China. I'm not making this up. You look it up. The number's like 339, right? The daughter of the last president, Ivanka Trump, she has Chinese trademarks that she uses to sell product in China. China's got 1.4 billion people. It is a major marketplace for companies, not just in the United States, all around the globe. If you're going to what about this by saying, well, what about the NBA in China? First of all, I think you're telling on yourself. But really, a marketplace that size is interesting to every major corporation on the planet. Coca-Cola and McDonald's and everybody else who's interested in tapping into that gigantic market. Selling to whatever your product is, offering your services for a fee to a large group of people is very different from allowing yourself to be used for a price. You're not selling anything. You are allowing this government to use you. So, and again, I am not trying to make this a morality play. I am simply trying to explain the difference between the association with China and the association with the Saudi Arabians. That's all. That's all. Again, I think I've been upfront. I said right out of the gate, if they were really into sports radio, I ain't sure I'm not doing a show about LIV Golf today. We sort of did anyway. But I'm not sure I'm not talking about it differently. I'm not trying to front about anything here. The amount of money is staggering. Dustin Johnson doubled his career earnings, or he didn't quite. He could double his career earnings by what he does in the 8 events this year. I mean, the number is probably closer to 150 that he got guaranteed. And the amount of money they are playing for, $4 million to the winner this week. There's team bonuses. There's end-of-year bonuses. Dustin could end up doubling. He has made $74 million just in tournament winnings on the PGA Tour. He's exceeded that by 150% based on the last couple of days. It's amazing. Again, I'm not trying to make it a morality play. I just wanted to explain the difference. So for those of you who want to say, what about China? What about China? What about China? That's the difference. That's at least the way I see it. You may see it differently, and that's fair.
This is the Adam Gold Show.